What's good, everybody? This episode of the podcast is sponsored by DistroKid. They are the go-to for digital music distribution and the easiest way for musicians to get your music onto Spotify, iTunes, Amazon, TikTok, YouTube, and all the places you need your music to be. They offer unlimited uploads, and artists keep 100% of their earnings in-store 10 to 20 times faster than any other distributor. Fastest payouts, they help out with automatic splits, cover song clearance, and all kinds of other amazing tools and templates to help you get the most visibility for your releases. I dig this company and really appreciate their business model that offers more features than any other distributor at the most affordable price possible for solo musicians, bands, studio artists, DJs, and any other creators that are producing music in their home, and they also offer label services as well. They've got three different tiers to offer creators that start as low as $22.99 a year. That's just $1.92 per month, and even their top tier breaks down to only $7.50 per month. And the best part about DistroKid sponsoring the podcast is that they are offering Dan Cable Presents listeners 30% off your first year of membership, making their already affordable services even cheaper for you. Check out the link in the episode notes. I also put it in my Instagram bio in the link tree. Click that link and it'll give you 30% off your first year of service. Super stoked to have DistroKid sponsoring the podcast and can't thank them enough for their longtime support of this thing. Let's start the episode. What is happening, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of the Dan Cable Presents podcast. Thank you for tuning into the program once again. If this is your first time listening, thanks for checking out the show. You can find fresh episodes coming at you every Tuesday. And if you want to help support this thing in a free way, you can do so by clicking subscribe on iTunes, clicking write a review, giving the podcast 5 stars if you feel like it is deserving of so, and that will help propel this thing into the tops of those iTunes charts, giving it more visibility on the national and international levels, helping strangers find the podcast, and just a great way to contribute to the growth and sustainability of this thing. I appreciate the hell out of all the folks that have already taken the time to do so. If you're not listening on Apple, just hit like, follow, subscribe wherever you are listening from. Give it a 5-star rating on Spotify if that's where you're listening from. Tell a friend about the podcast. Check out the monthly playlist that I've been dropping every first of the month. Those are available on Apple and Spotify, and the links for those are in the episode notes. Hope everyone is doing well out there. This week's episode of the podcast is an I Dig Records episode. I haven't done one of these in a really long time, and I miss doing this series regularly and being out on the road with 7 other people right now. We're always talking about certain records, so I thought it would be fun to grab some of my high pulp bandmates while out on this tour and talk to some of them about one of their favorite records. So that is what is happening this week. Sorry this is coming out a couple hours or so late in the Eastern time zones. Doing my best to keep up with this thing while out on the road for a month, but it messes with the schedule a bit. So thank you for your patience. And as always, appreciate y'all tuning in to this thing. So my guest on this volume of I Dig Records is Lucy Morrill. Lucy is the social media manager for High Pulp, and this is her second full tour with the band, this one being the longest. By the end of this thing, we'll have been out on the road for nearly a month, and we're a little bit past the halfway mark. We are currently in Minneapolis, Minnesota, and we recorded this thing on our day off today on the porch at this beautiful house that is the childhood home of the band's keys and synth player, Rob Homan. We're staying with his parents, and they're just incredibly sweet people. Some of us just stayed at the house all day while others went into the city tonight, and his mom made breakfast, lunch, and dinner for us, which is just next level hospitality when you're traveling like this. And it's nice to know that we're here for 3 consecutive nights, get to hang in one place for a minute, is always a luxury on tour as well. But Lucy's great, and it's been nice having her out on the road with us. She's such a great person to learn from on a social media level, and she's definitely improved my Tuna Boy videos with tips and ideas. New Tuna Boy video also just dropped. And she's also my biggest age gap in the band. There's 13 years between us, and I think that consistently hanging around younger people because of the life path I've chosen these last 8 years with starting the podcast and just being super involved in the music scene, it's just been huge, I think, for my personal development. And I think hanging with people of all ages really just helps with perspective. And specifically with the younger people, I think it helps you avoid the trap of not understanding the younger generation. So very grateful that this type of work puts me in spaces where I'm not just in a weird echo chamber of my own generation on a regular basis. And Lucy picked a great record from Nico Case that I was not familiar with, as we talk about in this conversation. It is called Fox Confessor Brings the Flood. It's from 2008. It was produced by Daryl Newdorf and put out on Anti Records. And this is Lucy Morrill and I chatting about the record. All the links for Lucy, Nico Case, Anti Records, High Pulp, and myself are in the episode notes. Send me an email about what you're listening to out there. DM me. And this is volume 36 of I Dig Records. Let's do the damn thing. Super funny and entertaining on the mic?
Yes.
On a level of 1 to 10, how nervous are you about this?
I'm a 5. I know it probably won't go that. I know I'll probably be fine. But I'm nervous that listeners may say, this girl, I don't trust her.
You don't trust her? In what way?
She's like, I don't believe she likes music.
Wow. Yeah. All right. Well, let's talk about that. I feel like this is a good starting point.
Okay.
We're on this tour with High Pulp.
Yeah.
You are on the road as the, the social media manager, capturing all the fun things so we can have entertaining content to post on the High Pulp Instagram, grid.
Yeah.
The Instagram feed.
The feed.
The deal. But like, I'm curious, like, if you ever thought that you would find yourself in this position of being out on the road for like 4 weeks with a band?
No, definitely not. I feel like, well, the origin story is that I got way too drunk at a show in Oakland in 2021, and saw High Pulp when I was up in San Jose visiting my boyfriend's family. And I was like, oh, this seems so fun. I was working a paralegal job that I didn't like very much and was depressed about it. I was like, now this is the life you guys are living. You guys are doing it. And then Bobby's like, well, get on the bus then.
Yeah.
He's like, if it's so cool, like, just get on the bus. We have room until Austin, which is when you were going to meet up with them.
Yeah. It was so funny.
Yeah.
You were there when I met the band in Austin, and you covered the first few shows of running the merch table, and you had a system in place.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the band created this goofy rivalry between the two of us.
Yeah.
You know, before we even like met, which was very funny.
Yeah, it was.
I loved it.
Yeah. There was only one seat. I mean, we couldn't both have that seat, so.
Yeah, there was only one seat available, and then we just left you in Austin. I was like, well, hope Lucy gets back to San Diego.
I did.
You made it back, and it inspired you to go on more.
Yeah, it inspired me
runs.
To go back to San Diego, get fired from my paralegal job, because I was like, there's something way more fun out there, and I've lived it now. And then entered this kind of quest of wanting to work in music, and have done a variety of things, but then found myself back to being like, hey, I can help you guys out maybe with the social media stuff,
yeah.
Which has been really fun.
And you're great at it.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. It's you've stepped up the game for the gang. But like, what was your relationship with music growing up? Because I know every once in a while you pull out one of these like these horns and you know how to play it. You know, I know that you did some stuff growing up musically.
Yeah, my parents like insisted that we all play instruments. Like it was not an optional elective. It was a non-elective elective in our family. So like I did band starting in fourth grade all the way through my senior year of high school.
And you're tied to this band is your brother.
Yes. My brother is in the band.
The saxophone player, Andy.
Yeah.
And he's just like an incredible musician. Does it feel like extra special, do you think, to be out on the road having your brother as a part of this thing? Like it's a family affair.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. I'm just really proud of him. Like it's really cool for me to be able to see him do his thing night in and night out. And I feel like him and I, we're very close. Our emotional bond has only strengthened since I started living with him in Pasadena. So yeah, it's like, I feel like we need each other out here.
Yeah, I think it can be like a grounding thing. Like for me to have my cousin, Bobby, you know, drummer of the band out here on the road. It's like during the, it's not always easy being on the road like the way that we're doing things. And I think it's nice to look across the bus and just like see that he is also on this adventure with me.
It's
very grounding at times.
Yes. Yeah. So. Good word for it.
But what's your, like growing up, were you a pretty big music head? Like, were you from an early age developing your own collection or taste in music?
Yeah, I was definitely getting an iTunes gift card for every birthday and Christmas so I could get on there and start down. I remember when it went from 99 cents a song to like, what was it, like 129 or something?
Yeah.
So a $25 gift card didn't go as far anymore. But yeah, I mean, I would have my iPod was just full of music. And yeah, I don't know. I'm uncomfortable calling myself a music head, even though I listened to so much music growing up. But it always feels like there's people that are just way more knowledgeable about it than me. And know so many more bands than me. So
I don't know. When I talk to you, it seems like you have a pretty good grasp on what's happening. And you're a pop culture junkie, it seems like.
That is kind of true. Yeah.
That feels pretty accurate.
Yeah.
It just feels like, you know, like about a pretty wide range of music and like different genres. And even when I asked you about doing this goofy I Dig Records thing, I felt like you picked three records that were like in different genres, like very far away from each other. I'm not exactly, do you remember what the other ones were before? Like we're going to do this Nico Case record, but do you remember what the other things that you threw out there?
Yeah. So My Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy.
Yep.
And then I think I'm also going to go The Rise and Fall of Ziggy Stardust.
Okay.
I think I was on the fence for my like rock based one.
Yeah.
But I'll go with that.
Was it always pretty wide range of stuff that you were listening to as a kid?
Kind of, but like as I would say I was like mostly a rap kid, like in fifth grade, driving to school, we were playing Graduation. My mom was very supportive. My dad was horrified by the lyrics.
Dude, I love that we have this like 13 year age gap between this because Graduation came out when I was like freshman year of college.
Oh, that's crazy.
And that was like insane. I went to like a predominantly black college. Like I was the only white kid in the dorm. So like when that shit popped off, it was insane. It was like Jay-Z's Black Album, Kanye, Graduation, and just insane.
Oh my God. Was it just playing everywhere?
Yeah. It was wild. And there was like all these people in my dorms like making beats on Fruity Loops software. And like, yeah,
that's
it was
so
like
cool.
The first time I ever saw people like cypher and battle rap and like people were doing it.
Yeah.
It was nuts.
Wow.
But yeah, it's just funny that like that is kind of like your early love of music is the rap stuff, because this Nico Case record, this Fox Confessor Brings the Flood is like very far away.
Yeah.
From that. It's like this kind of like twangy, folky, alt country album. I saw it on Wikipedia. It's described as a country noir.
I love that. I saw that too. Yeah. That was a great description.
That is an awesome description. I also love that you very unintentionally picked an artist on Anti Records, which is also the label of High Pulp, the band that we were on tour with. So I thought that that was a fun coincidence.
Yes, I swear I had no idea back when I first started listening to this, and I was like, oh, wait.
You're just trying to put up anti points.
Guys.
Put me on anti.
Right.
But you were 10 when this record came out in 2008, so I'm assuming that is not when you stumbled upon it.
Yeah, didn't find it at 10. I found it. It's actually a discovery from this year, but I think it's, or I guess late last year, fall of 2022. I found Star Witness on a, you know, indie folk playlist on Spotify. And I knew Nico Case from New Pornographers, but I had never listened to just her stuff. So after hearing that song, I was like, holy shit. So I went to listen to the whole album, and I was working from home while I was listening to it, but it was so distractingly good, and I was like, oh my god. And then just sort of started an obsession of listening over and over and over, and I'm still doing that, and I just think it's one of my favorite albums of all time, which is why we're here.
Were you listening to like anything else in this realm, like genre wise that was like some parallel to this music? Because I guess I don't really, speaking of people that don't know a lot about music, I don't really know the New Pornographers catalog that much. Like, I maybe like know a few songs, and like I know about kind of their like place in the zeitgeist of music, but I'm not super familiar with their music.
Yeah. I'm not like expert on their discography, but like Challengers is one of my faves. So I, you know, one of those bands that I really think of affectionately and have a lot of songs on my playlists and stuff. So I feel like what I was listening to, I just stumbled upon it really being in kind of this indie folk genre. Yeah. I was sort of, that's music that I feel drawn to a lot of times. It's like emotional and it resonates. So just kind of going through that playlist, but this really stuck out. Like, indie folk is a fine title for it, but I think it's also, I like country noir.
Yeah, country noir is very cool. And it's kind of, it's like, it's got this fairy tale vibe to it too, with like a lot of the tracks, I think, or just like the way the storytelling is done.
Yeah.
I think she does like such a cool way of like masking her own personal experiences through these like stories that have a lot of mystery to them. Like the opening track is that Margaret versus Pauline. And it just like makes me like, I want to know what the dynamics of like more, like as I'm listening to this track, like I want to know what is the dynamic between this relationship between these two people? Like are they sisters? Is it a jealous sister type thing? Is it like, what is it?
Yeah, those lyrics, like everything's so easy for Pauline. I know exactly, like for me, it's so vivid. Like I know exactly what she's talking about. That person who just, everything seems really easy for them in life. Like, why the hell? Why is it like this for me and like that for you? And I think, I know that the whole fairy tale element, I know she has said that, that she loves fairy tales, but that we don't really have fairy tales anymore in modern society. We have like movies and stuff, but we don't tell like fairy tales anymore. And especially those older European folk tales that weren't so moralistic. I know she said it's not necessarily about like right and wrong or trying to learn a lesson. It's just like the fantasy and the story.
Yeah.
And you can really feel that, because I don't know who the hero is here. There's like some, you know, there's like some murder or some crime that takes place throughout the album. That's how I feel from the song Star Witness. But then, yeah, we don't really know who's in the right or who's in the wrong. Is mistaken for the thrashing in the lake of a make-believe monster whose picture is fake. Margaret is the fragments of a name. Her love pours like a fountain. Her love steams like rain. Joy aches from wanting, and she's sick from chlorine, but she'll never be as clean. There's a cool side of Seth and Pauline.
Did you feel like listening to the record that there was, like, even the first time that there was, like, some kind of, like, through line between all of the songs?
I wanted there to be. I can feel it that way, but I'm not sure that there actually is. But to me, it does feel like a story. I feel that there's some crime, some murder, and
okay.
we follow some character who saw it throughout in a variety of situations.
Yeah. So you're like, even this just like completely changes my perspective on
really?
Listening to this record. Cause I like didn't really think about it that way. I've only listened to it the one time yesterday on the bus. I'd never heard this record before. You told me about it. I like Nico Case is like one of those names that I know, but I think when I came to her, she was doing, man, I can't remember the record that she did with like a few other people. And the title of it is like Case, someone. It's the Nico Case, Katie Lang, and Laura Veers record.
Mm.
That is the thing that I'm thinking of. And that was like 2016, it looks like. And that also came out on Anti.
Oh.
But that was like when I first started hearing her name and then kind of going back a little bit to find stuff. But
yeah,
I've completely taken you off track about your feelings about
this
through line of this this record and just this murder that potentially has happened.
Was it magical for you? Like, what did you feel when you were listening to it?
I think it's like the instrumentation and the arrangements are like so beautiful that it's like one of those records that definitely invites me in right away. And especially her style of storytelling with that opening track. And I think my feeling was listening to it front to back that I didn't necessarily feel like there was this common thread necessarily, but it felt like all of the songs lived inside the same world.
Yeah.
And then when I started thinking about the fairy tale element of it, I started just kind of feeling like it is this collection of fairy tales that all exists in the same world.
Yes.
And they're not, maybe they are related, maybe they're not, but they all feel like they belong together.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe that's how I feel. Wait, I want to take that. Maybe that's how I feel too. Cause it would be hard for me to like take you through each song and be like, and this is the part where this happens. And that, cause I don't think it's probably like that, but the same world. I really like that. Yeah,
yeah.
I agree.
What are some of your favorite moments from the record or favorite tracks that stand out to you? Or
Star Witness is such an incredible song.
Beautiful.
Me trying to play that song on guitar constantly, trying to like match her. It's her voice is just insane. Like it's crazy how bouncy and light that chorus is, and like it's not doesn't feel that way to sing it when you're trying to do it yourself. Like it's really challenging. It's such a beautiful song. I feel like that second verse where she's like, "Come pretty baby, get high with me."
Dude. Fucking in the notes, dude. Love the second verse.
Yes. We can go to my sister's if we say we'll watch the baby.
Amazing.
That's just like, I'm there. Like, I know exactly what the fuck she's talking about. I don't know. And then I even love after that, like, the look on your face yanks my neck on a chain. Like, that's just also very evocative for me.
Hey, pretty baby, get high with me. We can go to my sister's if we say we'll watch the baby. The look on your face yanks my neck on the chain. And I would do anything, I would do anything to see you again. So I've fallen behind.
I just think the way the vocals captured too, just like there's so much soul and like feel to it. Like it feels like this very live take to me. Like it doesn't feel like manufactured in any way, and it just like makes it so easy to like just fall into whatever she is saying and just go with it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I'm there. Like with all these songs, I'm just like, I'm there. I have such a clear picture. It's like when you're reading a book and you can picture the characters really well because the author's doing such a good job.
Yeah, the imagery.
And some books you just can't. You're like, who's my character here?
Yeah.
But with this one, I'm like, I'm in it. And I always associate this album too with like, one of the times I was listening to it the most was when I went to Big Bear in like February. Mm-hmm. So I always just picture I picture snow with this album. There's always snow for me.
Oh, that seems like a very cool time to like listen to this.
Yeah.
Even listening to it right now with you, like that just seems like very picturesque.
Right?
You know, it was like when we were driving through Wisconsin, like through, I think it's Eau Claire or Eau Claire.
Mm.
It's like where Justin Vernon made a lot of the Bonnie Bear shit.
Oh, yeah.
And just like driving through that just made me think about that. And just like when you could put a setting to something, or I don't know, growing up in Southern California and knowing about all the stuff happening in Seattle in like the Pacific Northwest, when I moved to the Pacific Northwest, it all like made so much more sense. Like the dark, dreary, gray stuff, like thinking about like Nirvana and Pearl Jam and Soundgarden making that music in that area. It was just like, oh yeah, of course.
Yeah.
Like this makes a lot of sense.
Totally. And you know, that's her too. She grew up in Tacoma. So I did not know that. Yeah. I feel elements of that there too. Like, I think I was reading that like the needle has landed. It's supposed to be like conjuring images of the Pacific Northwest and just the dark and the trees looming, all that.
Do you usually associate like albums or songs with like things like that? Like you're talking about just that listen when you're up in the snow.
Yeah.
Like, is it easy for you to associate albums with things like that?
Always.
Yeah.
Like The Killers, Hot Fuss. Uh-huh. I'm on a bike in San Diego. I'm riding through the UCSD campus. I didn't go there, but I'm just like, that's where I am.
Yeah.
And it doesn't really matter where I hear it. Like that's where I am.
Yeah. I think I do that with places, but also I do it with people a lot.
Mm.
Like this record, I will forever associate with you. Like
Hell
when I
yeah.
go buy this record, like when I find, I don't know if it exists on vinyl, but I feel like I have to have it now. And it will like be a representation of like this tour, and then like just like doing this podcast with you, and like you're the person that like put me onto the record. And I feel like most of the records that I have in my collection, I will usually associate with a person.
That's cool. Dude, I'm honored. What a great one to be associated with.
No, you picked a great record. You've put me on to something I did not know about.
Put Dan Cable on.
And now I feel like I want to go through more of the Nico K stuff because I don't really know the catalog of music. Did that make you do the same, or have you kind of like hovered around this one?
Yeah, that's another thing that actually really happens to me is I get really like tunnel visioned with an album, and sometimes it takes me a while to get to anything else. But Blacklisted, I got into as well, that 2002 record. Didn't have great record. Didn't have the same like insane effect on me, but great. Especially that song, I Wish I Was the Moon, is... I listen to that song a lot. I wish I was the man, frankly.
So do you feel like the indie folk, or like this kind of alt country, as it is labeled sometimes, is like usually does that thing for you where it just like creates a lot of imagery for you, and that's why you're drawn to this style of music in general?
Yeah, I think it definitely does. I actually think a lot of genres can do that for me, which is why I find myself with such an extensive, such a wide array of things. But definitely I think a lot of this music falls more into some singer-songwriter vibes, which is a lot of times the really connected, and you're pouring their hearts out a lot of times. So.
Puts you in your feels.
Yeah, totally. Lots of rap music can put me in my feels too, though. Like there's lots of rock and roll, lots of stuff. Anybody could get it, any song.
You're talking about picking up the guitar to like try to learn these songs. Is that something you do like pretty regularly? You're usually pretty inspired to maybe like learn some of this stuff or figure it out?
Totally. And especially a song is really good. I'm not a good guitar player.
Yeah.
I'm not an experienced guitar player, so a song is really good if it'll make me work on a new bar chord.
Okay.
Because I really only like things that don't have bar chords, but with this song, there's like three of them. And I didn't even think twice. I was like, I got it. I mean, I have to do it. Yeah. I have to figure this shit out. So
always singing too.
Yeah. Yeah. I really like to sing. I really like to try to follow along with her, just how effortlessly. I don't know all the technical terms, but just, I took singing lessons for a while, so I know some of the terms, but I'll never know the execution. Yeah. But just the way she like bounces from like her chest voice into these beautiful belts that don't even sound like belts because they're so easy.
Yeah.
It's crazy to try to do.
Yeah, I think it's impressive when someone is doing something like so technically sound, but it's not like this flashy kind of run. Like they're not trying to draw attention
yeah.
to their voice in that way, but it just like is naturally happening.
Yeah.
It's like, I don't know, it comes on subtly at times when you to just like understand how fucking good she is, and it feels like effortless.
Yes.
At times, like this I love teenage feeling.
Yes.
Yeah.
I do too.
It's like this dark, dreamy pop song.
Yeah.
So good. I feel like it's like the, it feels different than a lot of the tracks on the record too, to me. It was one of the ones that like stuck out just like arrangement and instrumentation wise.
And nothing comforts me the same as my brave friend who says, I don't care if forever never comes, cause I'm holding out for that teenage feeling. I'm holding out for that teenage feeling. All the love we have, all we ever knew.
Are you a lyric listener, a close lyric listener, or a close music listener?
Good question. I would say I always leaned lyric listener, even up until 10 years ago.
Mm.
And then there was this shift that happened that made me more excited just about a feel, general feel of a song. And I felt like the lyrics in some way changed for me, but I don't know. It's hard for me to ignore what's happening lyrically, you know?
Yeah.
And that is usually what connects very heavy to me.
Right, right.
What about you?
I'm definitely a lyric person, yeah. and that's something that I feel like gets pushed a little bit hanging around an instrumental band.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's like, that's opened my, honestly, being in this world of the instrumental music has definitely opened my eyes, made me a closer listener to the music. Yeah. And I mean, it's all connected, but I definitely default to the words that are being said to me. But some people just don't. And that's always really interesting to me. Like I'll ask my boyfriend, I'll say, what did you think of that song? And he's like, the music was good. And I was like, how about those lyrics? He's like, I did not hear them. What the hell?
Yeah. Yeah. Some people just like listen to music that way.
Yeah.
And they're just purely like listening to the thing as a whole and not like really paying attention to the narrative.
Yeah.
Which, yeah, it is a little strange to me too, because I definitely, even though I'm like way more open to instrumental music more than I ever have been, and I enjoy it more than I ever have, just because it doesn't have a narrative. And I think that's an exciting thing, is that it's purely based on like whatever it makes you feel, and like whatever, whether it's like evokes like a story in your head or just like imagery, or like it can like really take you on a different journey, I think, because there is nothing telling you how you should feel.
Right, right.
But I've also found that like, I think the really great songwriters leave this element of mystery where it really just like connects to you in whatever way it connects to you. And like, it doesn't necessarily have to be like these always like even complete thoughts that like make you feel something. Like it can just be as like simple as like, I saw you at the grocery store, and then that's it. Like, and then it can like jumps to this other thing that has no context to it. Or like, I really love when people mention specific places
Yeah, that's cool.
Because even if I've never been to that place, I feel like I'm in that place.
Yeah, totally. And I feel like there's a shift towards hyper specificity right now in a lot of songwriting, which is cool. I know some people really, really connect with that. But I definitely feel what you're saying, maybe, of like leaving stuff to the imagination. Hyper specificity can take me out of it sometimes. Yeah. I'm like, well, I don't know. That sounds like it just happened to you. I don't know.
At Last is one of my favorite tracks.
Yeah.
It just pulls me in right away. Just even like instrumentally, just immediately like taken with it. And then she starts singing and I'm just like completely surrendered to it. I don't really even care what she's saying, but I'm just like, I'm here for it.
Yeah.
But this is also a very cool, like, I just don't even know if I knew at this stage in the game in 2008. Like, this is like a 1 minute song. It's very quick.
Uh-huh.
It leaves me wanting so much more, and I love it and hate it for that reason.
Oh, I know.
You know, like, yeah. I'm just like, fuck, I wish she would just sing me like another verse or something. But then there's also this very cool element to that to me where I like that she didn't feel obligated to.
Right.
You know,
right.
She was just like, this is what I had to say here. And it's just like this amazing, beautiful minute. And I think at a certain time, I would have felt differently and not as excited about just this 1 minute thing. But then I fell in love with bands like Pine Grove,
mm-hmm.
who do like that sort of thing where sometimes it's just like this minute and a half thing. And it's just like, no, this is it. Like, this is what I had.
Yeah. Yeah. A song can be anything. That's something Andrew's talked to me about before. I'll be like, Andrew, I wrote this thing, but it's not a real song because it's this length. And he's like, no, that could be a song. So he taught me that. But I definitely feel you that at one point I wouldn't have acknowledged that as a real, as like a complete thought. But no, I agree. I love that song so much. And if death should smell my breathing. A widow's toast definitely makes me emotional. I feel like it's like about, you know, grief and loss, and maybe it refers to our murder in this album, but sometimes I'm like, I feel like it's a something for me too.
What about it do you feel like resonates with you?
I think it's just that piano coming in as she sings the as she like hits that note. And something about the better times collide with now, and better times are coming still. I've definitely been in my car listening to that and been crying, been like, okay, thanks, Nico.
Better times collide with now, the tears were warm, I feel them still. Their heat to vapor and disperse. And cloud our eyes with weary glaze. You raise your glass and may exclaim, I'll put my hands on the truth bar, God. But it's faster love.
I do love how like naked her voice is on this one too. Like there's not a whole lot going on instrumentation wise. And it's another one of those songs. It's like a minute and a half.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Which is kind of like, I think, goes in line with that fairy tale thing of like, they're not always all the same length, you know?
Right.
There does seem to be like a lot, like, even aside from this song, a lot of like religious imagery.
Yeah. John saw that number.
Yeah. Yeah. That one has not only like the religious like imagery,
mm-hmm.
but it also like to me has like this very like hard gospel vibe to it.
Totally.
When it gets going.
Totally. I was reading somebody's analysis of that song and they were like, yeah, you know, Case contemplates how much easier life would be with religion, with like a devout belief. And I think that gave me kind of new perspective too. I was like, oh, maybe it's like imagine if this was you, imagine if you were John and you really and you really believed in all that, maybe this shit would be easier.
Where does that hit? Did you and Andy grow up in a religious household?
No, we grew up on a Easter and Christmas. We go to church.
Okay.
And it was always welcomed if anybody wanted to take it beyond that. Like, my mom is very supportive of, you know, people of religion. And, yeah, like, if, you know, because some people really don't like religion.
Yeah.
And
it
would
be a very, like, sore subject.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I feel like our family, it was open to it, but not enforcing it in any way. And I don't know. That's left me somewhere in between. I believe in something. The other thing I noticed about this album is, like, you know how there's some albums where there's songs where you're like, wow, that melody just doesn't grab me at all. So I can't, like, there's songs that are just skips. You know what makes a no skip album?
Yeah.
I feel like one thing that makes this such a no skip album is every song has, like, a really catchy melody, and not catchy, yeah, in, like, a gimmicky way, but catchy, like, really sticks with you, not just kind of, oh, where was that melody? Did I hear that? Did I pick that up? You know?
Yeah. I like that this also just, like, it never seems, going back to the thing of, like, not really feeling like it's necessarily, like, a common thread and living in the same world. I do feel like not a lot of the songs, like, live in the same space. So, like, each song has, like, its distinct sound,
yeah,
and feels like its own thing.
Yeah,
like no other song on this record sounds like John saw that number.
No, not at all. Yeah, that's so true,
which makes it exciting, I think, like going from track to track, and makes it like kind of that no skip thing.
True,
because it's like, oh, well, I've already kind of like heard this.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. No, that's exactly right. Each one is like new story, same world, as you said.
Do you know or like the band Lucius?
I don't know the band Lucius.
Oh, I'm excited to show you some Lucius.
Oh, let's go.
Because like when I listened to particular tracks on this album, mm-hmm, it made me feel like there was no way that Lucius was not inspired by Nico Case.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, cool. Yeah. Yeah.
And I could be absolutely wrong, but there is some folky pop elements to the Lucius music, mm-hmm, specifically like a couple records, because I think that like their sound continues to like kind of expand from record to record, but there's some very much some Lucius vibes here.
Oh, let's
like, yeah,
go.
It made me, when I was listening to this, it made me want to like dive back into to Lucius. And it's just like these two incredible female singers that lead that band, and yeah, they're amazing.
Right, well,
beautiful harmonies. I want to talk about Dirty Knife.
This furthers my concept of this being a murder mystery.
The arrangement on the song is crazy. It's just strings, pretty much.
Yeah.
It's just like these cellos, I think.
Yeah.
I'm no expert.
I think you're right.
But this leads you further down this like this murder mystery thing.
Yeah. The dirty knife. We have a dirty knife and we have a star witness, okay? And a fox confessor bringing the flood, which I don't know exactly what that means, but
yeah. The confessor. Yeah. Damn. And he slept like I, while the dirty knife wore deep into his spine. Blood runs crazy. Blood runs crazy. Do you feel like when you listen to this album each time that you are figuring out more about this like murder mystery kind of thing? Like, do you take away anything like different about that storyline with each listen?
Do I take away something different? That's an interesting question. I feel like I'm not like piecing the story together more. I'm not like, oh, and this detail means this and this means this, but it always furthers my sense of like, now this character is trying to hide the dirty knife. Like,
yeah,
there they go. Yeah, it's just so, it's so magical and mysterious, and everything is just, I don't know, you're in like a storybook when you listen to this. And it's crazy, like this is the kind of album that you could, I only run to rap music pretty much exclusively. This is the kind of album you could run to too, because you could just be in your head like picturing all this crazy shit.
Yeah. Yeah, this was like a really nice record to listen to on the bus yesterday, as we were just like traveling through all these different environments, and it was like a pretty nice sunny day yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it's like so grand at times too.
I know. It's dramatic, but it doesn't feel like theatrical, but it is dramatic.
And there's that, like, this is another one of the tracks that has like that dark energy too. Like,
yes, this one's like, scary.
Oh, yeah.
I'm scared.
This is like the music to, that should have been played like going up to that North Dakota house.
Oh God, yeah, totally. That haunted house in North Dakota.
Dude, some gnarly Airbnbs on this tour.
It's funny because that North Dakota one was haunted in just like a cute way, because we were in the middle of nowhere.
Beautiful farmhouse, beautiful property.
It was actually lovely.
Down like a mile and a half dirt road.
Yeah.
Nothing around it. Like, we could have all been murdered out there and no one would have given a shit.
No. The isolation was the scary element of that one. The one in Toledo was like actually scary.
Yeah. I've never reported an Airbnb in my life, and I'm a click away.
I still
I'm
have
a
to
click away from getting us a refund.
To draft your letter. That letter of complaint.
Yeah, it was fucking wild. That was memorable.
Yeah. I know some of these are like explicitly based on Ukrainian folk tales too, like from her grandmother.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So I know Fox Confessor Brings the Flood. There's like a Ukrainian folk tale about a fox. And I don't know any more than that, but it definitely makes me curious about those folk tales.
Yeah. I just also love people that use like other stories as kind of like framework for writing songs, because I think like songs are kind of like fun like that. Like, you can kind of like take one line from a movie or something and develop an entire song idea just from that, or take a folk tale, or, and that's just like, I guess what stories are in general, are just like recycled versions of all of the stories.
Yeah, yeah.
All the songs are all, you know.
There's no new stories in the world, really. So. Base it off one that's already been told. There's nothing new under the sun, as they say.
What purpose in these deeds, oh Fox Confessor, please? You married me to these orphan goods.
Lion's draw. You ever feel like you've been in a lion's draw?
I might be in the lion's jaw right now.
Yeah, dude.
I might be in the lion's jaw.
And this song is for you.
If anybody's really going through it out there, what does the lion's jaw like represent to you?
I think it's just moment of peril, and you, I picture you would have to show a lot of strength as you're in the lion's jaw to not just succumb, you know? I picture like somebody like holding it open, holding the lion's mouth open.
I love talking to you about this record, because I know that I'm going to, like, my second front-to-back listen to this record outside of the one that we are doing together right now is going to be so much different. You know, I'm going to be thinking intently about this murder mystery.
This murder,
right? And just like how the songs are connected in those ways. And
Yeah. And maybe they totally aren't. And I don't know if it's like, is it a waste of my time to connect all these in my head?
Not if it makes you interested, or if that's like what it evokes, I guess. You know? That's what it makes you feel like doing.
Thanks, Dan.
Then run with it. Yeah.
Keep running with it.
I'm curious, like, what your relationship is with like songwriting. Like, is that something you're like kind of actively doing on your own, or is it more like you're usually just inspired to learn how to play covers?
Sometimes I'm actively inspired to write songs. I feel like writing songs always feels super daunting to me. And I think that might be being around like proper musicians all the time. Like growing up, even though I played in the band and stuff, there was always like what I was doing. And then there was what Andrew was doing, which was really being a high level musician who was, you know, going to go to a conservatory and all that kind of stuff. And I was like, well, that's real music. And that's somebody who really knows about songs and songwriting and stuff. So I feel like sometimes I feel like there's a knowledge barrier, but then I hear from people like, no, anybody can do this.
Yeah.
But I like have trouble getting past that kind of mentally. A lot of times when I'm with my guitar trying to write something, I'm like, oh, this falls flat compared to what I hear all these people who really know about music doing, you know?
Yeah.
But that's something I'm kind of trying to push through. Andrew and I are writing some more music together lately, so it's fun. And he's a great collaborator, so.
Well, I'm sure if, like, he thinks what you're doing is cool, that's, like, validating in some way.
Yeah,
as
true.
Well. Like, if he is interested in, like, putting energy into what you're doing, him being such, like, a high-level player.
Right, right.
But, yeah, it's like, I don't know. I certainly don't think that you have to be a technically great musician to write great songs. Like, I think people have proved that over and over again, you know, and it like, you don't have to have the perfect voice.
Right.
That's been proven, you know, it's just like, people are just drawn into what you have to say, I think.
Yeah.
You know, and your delivery of those things.
Yeah.
Do you have like a desire to share music? Or play in front of people?
I'm so self-conscious. That's where I'm hoping to get to with this stuff that Andrew and I are doing, actually.
Yeah.
Because I think that would be really fun and really cool. And I mean, why did I take singing lessons for a year in San Diego? It does beg the question, right?
So that was like that wasn't like some like high school, junior high shit. You like did that as an adult in your life, like just made a choice for yourself to like take singing lessons.
Yeah. I would send my parents recordings of me playing and singing and they would be like, that sounds funny that I would send them and then they got me voice lessons, but I would send them these recordings and they would be like, you know, Lucy, we really like what you're doing.
Yeah.
We'd love for you to like start playing and start singing. And I would be like, well, I don't know anything about singing. And that led them to be like, well, if you want to find a singing teacher in San Diego, we'd be able to help with that. So that was really nice of them. And I proceeded to do that for a year with fantastic. She's in the San Diego Opera, actually. My voice teacher, Lainey, is incredible. But yeah, I did that and I didn't really know why. And I feel like now making some music with Andrum and him being like, we should perform this, maybe that was why, even though I didn't have that vision at the time.
Never know.
Yeah.
It's a great mystery.
Yeah.
I think it makes, I don't know. I'd be very excited to hear what music you are working on, just because I think people that have good ears for music and like, just knowing what I know about what you listen to and enjoy, mm-hmm. I think that makes me excited to know what you're working on,
aww.
What you're developing over there. I think also just like, since you have had a lot of opportunity, I'm just like thinking about how Bobby always talks about it. It's like, sometimes you just gotta be around it.
Yeah.
Like once you're around it, you know, like that's going to like help you like inform, you know, you're just going to get it. But on a very real level, I think you've had a lot of opportunity now to like be around people doing this and performing music and traveling the country doing it. Like we've covered a lot of ground out here in the last couple of weeks. We've driven all the way across the country and you get to see a band perform every night and you get to see other artists perform along with them. And
yeah,
I know this is like a very probably different style of music that you are working on, yeah. and maybe like brings you back to like that very like overwhelming, like daunting thing of like, oh, I'm not a musician like that.
Right, right.
Kind of thing. But I think it also like informs your perspective in a good way of like, if you do choose to deliver or perform this music at any point, like I think it will help you in that too, of like how you want to do it.
Yeah. No, thank you. And I feel like that's true, you know, even the kind of more functional elements of like, oh, okay, this is what happens when you walk into a venue. This is how you would say hi to the sound guy.
Yeah.
Like that stuff that if I was to just have like started trying to do this, you know, by myself in San Diego or whatever, I just really wouldn't have known. I wouldn't have even seen the kind of the ecosystem.
Yeah.
So that just from like a technical, how does this even work? Yeah. That it definitely helps a lot. Yeah.
What has been your favorite part of tour, being on like, this is being your longest run with the band? We did like, I don't know. We did like, what did we do? 7 to 10 days back in June. You were on that one, like that full one. That was like the first one that you did the whole thing for. But like, we are about 2.5 weeks into this. Mm-hmm. Like, how is it? How do you feel like you're holding up?
I think I'm holding up pretty well. I started extremely ambitiously with 4 runs in a row the first 4 days of tour. I was like, I'm running every single day. I feel like I started eating pretty well, started with the exercise, started with a good self-care habits. And it's definitely, I don't think that that is possible for a month on the road, just crashing at Airbnbs or people's houses. Like, it's just, you have like no control over your day to day to some extent. So, you know, I've tapered off quite a bit. But I think overall, I've held up pretty well. It hasn't been, I was really nervous about all this. And I feel like once we got going, we just got going. And you kind of settle into, this is our life.
Yeah.
We get in this bus.
Yeah.
We drive this bus. Unload the bus.
Load it back up.
Yeah. You know the drill. So yeah, you get more used to it and more comfortable with it than I would have realized. That being said, it's getting towards the home stretch and I'm definitely feeling the, okay, you know. I could use my own room again.
Is that your least favorite part?
No, I feel like my least favorite part is maybe just the long drive days. I have trouble sometimes being productive in a bus.
Yeah.
Some days are better than others, but
it's a difficult thing to figure out, especially for me who gets car sick.
Oh, I know.
It's really hard for me to be productive on the bus because of that element of it, where I was like, I'll try to like do stuff for a little bit and then I get nauseous and I'm like, well, we're not gonna do this. And then we get into the place that we're going at like 1 a.m and I'm like, I guess I'm not gonna do this now either because I'm just like so exhausted. So
The day is over. And kind of that restlessness when you're in a bus all day, it's like you're tired, but what have you done? It's like a really weird...
It feels fucked up.
Yeah, it feels really fucked up.
Yeah, you feel guilty for being so tired too because you like didn't really do anything, but it's just kind of, it is work sitting on a bus for that long in that sort of space, I think.
Believe it or not, guys, it is work. Yeah, no, totally. But it's funny because like also one of my favorite parts of tour has been, I haven't been anywhere in this country. Before this tour, I hadn't been most places in the Midwest. I hadn't been anywhere on the East Coast. Apparently, I went to Pennsylvania once. I don't remember. So that's also been my favorite part, is just seeing a lot of things, seeing a lot of really cool cities, and just like picking up vibes in different places, which sounds kind of funny, but there really is like distinct energy.
The regional shit is real.
Yeah. And it's cool. There's a lot of cool places in this country.
What's the place that has stuck out to you the most thus far?
Cincinnati really surprised me how much I love Cincinnati. So cool.
The hidden gem of the Midwest, Cincinnati.
I mean, it's very cool. Pittsburgh too, though. Like, I was kind of blown away driving around Pittsburgh. I was like, oh my God, I got to come back here.
That's so funny. Those are like the two spots that really stuck out to me when we did the national tour last year. Those are my two favorite American cities, probably. And just like, I was absolutely blown away by New York City. I know this was your first time going, so it was like pretty exciting to like see you as we were like driving in. I was just like, oh, she's going through the thing where you're like, this is fucking huge. Like every, like,
it's real.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. That was my vibe last time of just, you know, you see it in movies and TV and like photos all your life. And then you're finally like in the middle of it. And I know we didn't get to like spend much time there, and we were kind of only in Brooklyn in a very like small part of it, but I don't know.
Yeah, I just scratched the surface, and I was, yeah, very, very drawn to it. Want to go back. Very cool. Yeah. Amazing.
Is there anything about this Nico Case album that we didn't like talk about that you like think is worth mentioning? I thought maybe we'd play it out with The Needle Has Landed, since we didn't like spend a whole lot of time talking about that one, unless you have another track that is on this record that we didn't really talk about that you want to.
I think The Needle Has Landed is a great one.
What are your thoughts about this track?
Another mysterious one. I think it's a cool way to end it,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And I think that last line, and if I'd known then what's so obvious now, you'd still be here.
Ooh, that's too real for me right now, Lucy. I gotta go. That's Lucy Moore.
Right. That shit is so heavy. And it's like, on a personal level, it's a chilling line and furthers my murder mystery thing a little bit as well. So
that's amazing.
Yeah.
Are you familiar with the bonus track that is on this extended edition? It's a demo of Behind the House.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's where the knife gets buried personally.
Oh. So you think this was definitely a track that was written for this record that didn't make it?
I think so. This is your way of telling me that I couldn't save you?
Yeah, this is going to be such a different listening experience next time.
I'm like so deep into this. There's probably so many people who listen to this album and are like, what? No, it is not all a murder mystery.
I think people are going to love it. You're going to flip some perspectives on listening through this record.
I hope so.
You've done it. You've done a great job. You picked a great record.
Thanks,
Dan. You introduced me to a new album, which is my favorite part about doing this particular I Dig Record series, is like when I get turned on to something I didn't really know about or hadn't done the deep dive.
Yeah.
And you had lots of exciting things to say about it.
Thank you.
You changed you did it. You did the thing. You achieved a goal that you didn't even know that you had.
Yeah.
Which was to turn me.
Converts.
I mean, you didn't really turn. I wouldn't say turned.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, you know, you've made me more curious.
Cool.
You made me want to listen more. I feel like I have to get this record now and put it in my vinyl collection.
I want this record too now. I know it's still for sale. I see it on the Anti website.
Good.
Yeah.
Good. Also,
Anti, again, I mean, if you want to send one.
Anti. Anti Records, you know. We're kind of a part of your family.
You just don't know it.
No. All right, well, we'll play it out with that The Needle Has Landed, which is technically the last track on the record.
Yeah.
On the standard edition.
Yeah.
This is the last track on the Fox Confessor Brings the Flood.
This is so fun, Dan. Thank you.
Yeah, you feel good about it?
I feel good.
You feel all right?
Well, I don't think I was like the most articulate in the world, but you used a lot of good words to describe it.
Did
so.
I did?
Yeah.
No, I think you're far more the more articulate one between the two of us, Lucy.
No, you were talking about the arrangements.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll put all the links in the episode notes so people can keep up with you if you would like them to.
Yeah.
And
that'd be great.
Yeah. You're doing a great job with the pulp, the High Pulp social media. If you're seeing the High Pulp social media, and you're seeing all the wonderful videos being created, it's all Lucy. She is the magician behind the editing of those videos. And she is just out here capturing all the moments while we're out on the road, always having the camera on, always recording. And yeah, you're doing great.
Thank you, Dan.
It's very nice to have you out here as a part of the touring committee.
Thank you. And you're the tour manager of the year, of the century.
Tour manager of the century. Lucy is also comprising, I hear right now, a tour manager, Dan.
There's a highlight reel.
A highlight reel is either out now or it is soon to come and is going to be my tour manager resume soon. You know, that's how I'm going to sell myself to do this with other artists.
Yeah. Oh my God. Say the line, Dan.
No smoking?
Yeah.
Is that the one that you're here?
Yeah, you got it.
There's no smoking in this Airbnb, everyone. Most of the time there is no smoking inside or even outside Airbnbs. Just a hot tip for everybody out there. And if you want to learn more about my my hot tips for touring, you can DM me. Please let me know what you're listening to out there. Always curious. And thank you for bringing me a great record, Lucy. And I encourage you now to go check out some Lucius.
Thanks, Dan. Traffic slow.
Want to give a big shout out to DistroKid for sponsoring this episode of the podcast and for their longtime support of this thing. Don't forget to find that discount link in the episode notes or in my Instagram bio. 30% off your first year membership with DistroKid, helping you get your music in all the places it needs to be. Stay up, stay tuned.